All right, welcome everyone to another deep dive here on the Lexbook podcast. Today we're going to try to unpack a really interesting case from Louisiana's First Circuit Court of Appeal. It's called Janey v. Janey.
Sounds messy already.
Oh yeah. It's a family law case, so, you know.
Right. Always a little bit messy.
And if you're at all interested in how Louisiana family law works, especially when it comes to things like child support and these shared custody situations and figuring out what happens to community property after a divorce, this case is like a gold mine of information.
That's why we're here, right? To mine that gold.
Exactly. And we've actually gone through a bunch of stuff to get ready for this. We've got the actual court's decision, obviously, but also a super in-depth case brief, a more standard legal brief, and we even found some guidance specifically aimed at law students, like from another podcast, actually.
We're like giving everyone the cheat sheet version.
That's the idea. We're cutting through all the legal jargon and getting straight to what matters, especially for law students.
Awesome. So what's the big picture with this Janey v. Janey case? What are we really trying to figure out here?
So our main goal today is to pull out the most important practical takeaways from all this material. We're going to focus on a few key things. First, like, how exactly does Louisiana law define shared custody? It sounds simple, but trust me.
There's always a twist.
There's always a twist in the law, exactly. And then we're going to dig into the specific formula they use in Louisiana to calculate child support when parents share custody. Because, surprise, it's different than when one parent has sole custody.
Right, because expenses can get tricky when you're talking about two households.
Exactly. And last but definitely not least, we're going to tackle those kind of confusing rules about getting reimbursed if you used your own separate property to pay off debts that belong to the, you know, the marital property after the divorce is already done.
Yeah, that's something a lot of people probably don't think about until it's too late.
Unfortunately, that's true. And for all the law students out there listening, this isn't just some boring theoretical discussion, all right? This stuff is going to come up in your careers all the time. Like, think about it. You're going to be drafting custody agreements. You're going to be explaining to clients what divorce really means financially. And you're going to have to navigate dividing up all those marital assets. So this case, it's like a crash course and all that.
Definitely real world stuff.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's dive in. Where do we even start with all this?
Let's start with the core issue that's going to drive a lot of this discussion. Did the custody arrangement in this Janey v. Janey case actually qualify as shared custody under Louisiana law? We're talking specifically about what's laid out in that statute, LSARS 9.315.9.
Yes, the famous 9.315.9. Always a fun one.
Ow!
Well, to really answer that question, we need to look back at the history of the custody orders in this case. I mean, this thing goes all the way back to their initial divorce in, get this, 1995.
Oh, wow. So this has been going on for a while.
Oh, yeah. Big time. So back in 95, they got divorced. There was a child support order put in place. Seems pretty standard. But then in 2003, they had another agreement, a stipulation, where they actually lowered the child support amount and the dad got more visitation time.
Interesting. So that kind of sets the stage for the custody setup that this whole appeal is about, right?
Precisely. So in this final arrangement, the father had custody every other week. During the school year, it was Wednesday to Monday. And then during the summer, they'd alternate full weeks and holidays were split too.
Okay, so sounds pretty close to 50-50 at first glance.
You'd think so, right? But when you crunch the numbers, it turns out the dad had the child for about 45.3% of the time and the mom had the remaining 54.7%. And here's where that whole shared custody definition under Louisiana law becomes super important.
Okay, so 45.3%, 54.7%, not quite even, but close. What does the law actually say about what qualifies as shared custody?
So LSARS 9.315.9 says that shared custody means, and I'm quoting here, a joint custody order where each parent has physical custody for an approximately equal amount of time.
Approximately equal, huh? That seems pretty vague. No hard numbers.
Nope. No specific percentage. And that's where things get tricky. It's up to the courts to decide what approximately equal actually means in each case.
Gotcha. So back to Janey v. Janey. With the father's time at about 45.3%, did the trial court consider that to be approximately equal time?
They did. The trial court looked at the whole picture. You know, the alternating weeks, splitting holidays, all that. And they decided, yeah, 45.3% is close enough to be considered approximately equal.
Hmm.
And because of that, they used the shared custody child support formula.
Which I'm guessing is different from the regular child support formula.
Yeah, totally different. It takes into account that in shared custody, both parents are like shouldering a significant portion of the costs.
Mm.
Things like clothes, food, activities, all that. So it usually ends up being a lower monthly payment than in sole custody cases.
Makes sense. So in Janey v. Janey, what did this shared custody formula lead to? What was the actual support amount?
It came out to, wait for it, $62.88 per month.
Whoa, $62.88 a month. That's pretty low.
Yeah, it's definitely on the lower end. And as you might imagine, the mom was not happy about this at all, hence the appeal. So it went up to the First Circuit Court of Appeal. What did they think about all this? Did they agree with the trial court's approximately equal assessment?
They did. They ended up siding with the trial court. They upheld the decision. But what I found really interesting, and this is especially important for you law students out there, is how much the appellate court emphasized the trial court's discretion in these approximately equal cases.
Oh, yeah. That discretion is key. The courts have a lot of leeway in family law cases.
Right. And the majority opinion in Janey v. Janey, they basically said there's no magic number, no specific percentage that automatically qualifies as shared custody. What matters most is whether the joint custody order, in practice, really does give both parents comparable time with the child. So they looked at this alternating weekly schedule and said, yeah, this works, even though the percentages aren't perfectly even.
Interesting. So it's more about the spirit of the arrangement than just the math.
Exactly. And that's a really important takeaway. The court's looking at the bigger picture, but wait, there's more. Remember those concurring and dissenting opinions we mentioned? They had some different thoughts on this whole approximately equal thing.
Oh, yeah. Those are always fun to read. It's like getting a glimpse into the different perspectives on the court.
Right. So the concurring judge, they agreed with the outcome. They didn't think the trial court screwed up in finding shared custody here. But they had this really important point about why they reached that decision. They were kind of worried about relying too much on things like, you know, how involved a parent is in the kid's extracurriculars or what's written in those stipulated agreements as the main reason for finding shared custody.
Interesting. So just because a parent is super involved or they signed an agreement doesn't automatically mean it's truly shared custody in practice.
Right. Their point was that the real focus should be on the actual financial stuff. You know, all those expenses that get duplicated when both parents have the child for a big chunk of time. Just because parents agree on paper doesn't necessarily mean it's truly a shared custody situation financially.
Makes sense. You could be super involved in your kid's life even if you don't physically have them half the time.
Totally. So what about the dissenting opinion? They seem to have a very different idea of what approximately equal should mean.
Oh yeah, they were not shy about their opinion. They basically said, look, approximately equal should mean something way closer to an actual 50-50 split. They thought that allowing a difference like 10%, like we have in this case, to be considered shared custody just goes against the whole point of the law. They really wanted to see that stricter interpretation, you know, to make things more clear cut.
Interesting. So we have this spectrum of opinions here, from a flexible approach to a much more rigid one. It really shows you the ongoing debate in family law, right? How much wiggle room should courts have? How do we balance fairness with, like, clear rules everyone can understand?
Definitely. And it also shows you how important it is for lawyers to understand all these different perspectives. You got to be ready to argue your case effectively, no matter which judge you get.
Absolutely. Now, before we move on to the whole community property reimbursement issue, we got to talk about how they calculated the father's income for child support purposes.
Oh, yeah. The mom had a big problem with that, right? She thought they left out some of his business earnings.
Exactly. So the father owned a subchapter S corporation, just a type of business structure for our purposes. And the mom said his retained earnings and some shareholder loans he took out should have been counted as part of his income when they were figuring out child support. But the court disagreed.
Ah, the joys of business income and child support.
Oh,
always a fun combination.
The best, right. So the court basically went with what's laid out in LSARS 9.315, which deals specifically with how income from these S corporations is handled for child support.
And that statute focuses on what's called pass-through earnings, basically, the income that the owner actually receives personally.
Right. So unless there's clear evidence that the owner is, like, dipping into those retained earnings or using those loans for personal stuff, the courts generally won't count them as income for child support.
So the key is proving that the money's actually benefiting the parent directly. Otherwise, it stays out of the calculation.
Okay, so big lesson here for all our listeners, but especially those aspiring lawyers. When you're dealing with business owners, and especially those with S corporations, you got to be super clear about what income is actually available to them personally. That careful documentation is everything. Otherwise, you're going to have a tough time arguing that certain income should be included in child support.
Absolutely. Now, before we get too bogged down in the nitty-gritty of business structures, let's shift gears and talk about the other big legal issue in Janie v. Janie, reimbursement for when someone uses their own separate property to pay off community debts.
Ah, yes, the post-divorce money scramble. Always a fun one. This part of the case gets a lot more attention in the case brief and the podcast guidance we found than it did in the actual court's decision.
Yeah, the court kind of breezes over it, but it's a really important point. And the specific issue here was that the husband wanted to be reimbursed for some mortgage payments he made after the divorce was final.
On the house that used to be community property, right?
Yep. And the podcast we mentioned, they highlighted this really important article in the Louisiana Civil Code that deals with this whole thing, Article 2366. Basically what it says is, if you use your separate property money that's just yours, not part of the marital estate, to pay off a debt that belonged to the community, you usually have a right to be reimbursed for that.
Seems fair enough. But there's a catch, isn't there?
Oh, there's always a catch. The key here is that this right to reimbursement usually only applies to payments made before the community property regime ends. And that usually happens when the divorce is finalized.
Ah, so once the divorce is done, that's it.
Pretty much. The podcast even used the phrase bright line to describe the moment the community legally ends. Once you cross that line, any payments you make on old community debts, even if it's with your own separate money, are generally seen as gifts, not something you can be reimbursed for.
So the husband and Janie v. Janie, who is making those mortgage payments after the divorce, no luck.
Nope. The court said, sorry, no reimbursement for you. They made it very clear that the way Louisiana law is written right now, there's just no basis for getting that money back once the community property is gone.
That sounds like a pretty tough rule. So, lesson learned, figure out all that debt stuff before the divorce is finalized.
Exactly. Don't come until it's too late. Now, there was another interesting wrinkle in this case related to how community property is divided up. It involved what's called labor compensation.
Right. I remember seeing that in the case brief. Something about one spouse getting compensated for their work during the marriage.
Yeah. So it has to do with Article 2368 of the Louisiana Civil Code. In this case, the wife argued that she should be reimbursed for all the unpaid work she and her husband did that increased the value of his separate property.
So, like, if they both put a ton of work into fixing up his house, even though it was technically his separate property, she wanted to be compensated for her share of that work since it increased the value of the house.
Exactly. And the court actually agreed with her, at least partially. They said, yeah, she's entitled to some reimbursement for that.
Interesting. So, even though there's that strict cutoff for debt payments after divorce, when it comes to this labor compensation thing, it's a bit more complicated.
Oh, much more complicated. The calculation involves figuring out how much the separate property actually increased in value because of their work, and then subtracting any community funds that were already used for that same purpose.
So, like, if they used money from their joint account to buy materials for the house renovation, that would be subtracted from what she's owed.
Exactly. The idea is to prevent someone from being paid twice for the same increase in value.
That makes sense. So, big takeaway here is that while reimbursement for debt payments after divorce is pretty clear-cut, this labor compensation thing is much more case-specific and can get kind of messy.
Absolutely. Now, stepping back and looking at Janie v. Janie as a whole, what's striking is how the different judges viewed this approximately equal custody standard. The majority was pretty flexible, but the concurring and dissenting judges had some strong opinions.
Yeah, it really highlights the different approaches courts can take, right? And how lawyers need to be ready to tailor their arguments depending on who's hearing the case. So the majority, they really focused on the practical reality of the custody arrangement. Did it actually provide comparable parenting time, even if the numbers weren't perfectly even? That's what mattered to them.
Right. And the concurring judge, while they agreed with the outcome, really emphasized that financial aspect. It's not just about agreements or being involved. It's about who's actually shouldering the financial burden of raising the child. If it's truly shared custody, those costs should be shared too.
And then we have the dissenting judge who basically said, forget all this flexibility. We need a clear rule. They wanted something closer to an actual 50-50 split to qualify as shared custody. It makes you wonder, right? How much wiggle room should courts have in these cases? What's the best way to balance individual circumstances with, like, predictability in the law?
Yeah, it's a tough question. And it has real implications for how lawyers draft custody agreements and advise their clients.
So after Janie v. Janie, what are the key things lawyers need to keep in mind when they're putting together these custody agreements?
Well, it's clear that even though a perfect 50-50 split isn't strictly required for shared custody, the closer you can get to that, the better. And the agreement needs to be super specific about how that shared custody will actually work in practice. Don't leave any room for interpretation. Spell it all out.
And when lawyers are advising clients about child support, especially when business income is involved, what's the big takeaway from this case?
Documentation, documentation, documentation. Especially when it comes to S corporations, make sure you have clear evidence of what income is actually available to the owner personally. Otherwise, you're going to have a hard time getting it included in the child support calculation.
And last but not least, what about this whole community property reimbursement issue? What's the big lesson for anyone going through a divorce where this might come up?
Don't wait until after the divorce is final to figure this out. If you're going to use your own separate money to pay off community debts, do it while the community property regime is still in place. Once that divorce is finalized, you're likely out of luck.
So, to wrap things up, for all our listeners, especially you future lawyers out there, Janie v. Janie gives us some really important insights into how Louisiana courts are interpreting shared custody. It shows us how they apply that shared custody to child support formula, how they look at business income, and how strict they are about reimbursing separate property payments after a divorce. It's a case packed with practical lessons.
It also shows us the constant push and pull in family law between those more rigid mathematical formulas and the need for flexibility to account for all those unique family situations.
Right. And it leaves us with some really important questions to think about. Like, is this approximately equal standard for shared custody striking the right balance? Is it clear enough, or does it create too much uncertainty? Would a more specific rule be better, or would it be too inflexible? It's something to keep in mind as you delve deeper into this fascinating world of family law. Thanks for joining us for this deep dive into Janie v. Janie. We'll see you next time.